This first hour, I want to talk to Annie Leonard, and she is the founder of Story of Stuff Project. Now, why do I want to talk about the Story of Stuff Project? When I saw this film recently, I knew that it had been out. I had heard about it before, but I never watched it. And I'm that girl that's constantly trying to make sure that I recycle, you know, separating and doing this and doing that and holding on to a bottle or holding on to a piece of plastic or anything that can be recycled. I'll put it in my pocket. Or put it in my purse until I get someplace where I can put it in a recycling bin. But what is all of this for? Have we come any further than we thought we have? Have we moved mountains to make sure that Mother Earth knows that we are trying to do better? And what better person to talk to than Annie Leonard, founder of Story of Stuff Project? And if you have not seen this video, if you don't know anything about the Story of Stuff Project, I encourage you to go to storyofstuff.org. Welcome, Annie. Welcome to WCCO.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I had a chance to watch this recently. I think it was about a week ago, and I was so impressed by it, even though I'd heard about it. It just does not compare when you watch it. And you've had over 15 million views and counting on the Story of Stuff Project. How do you feel about that?
You know, when I made this film, I thought I'd be lucky to get 50,000 views. That was my goal, 50,000 views in 10 years. Because after all, it's a film that looks at the hidden underside of all the stuff in our lives. You know, a lot of people don't want to look at that. So I thought I'd be lucky to get 50,000 views. And to my amazement, we got that in one day. And so now we're actually at over 20 million views.
Oh, my goodness.
We found a bunch online that we hadn't tallied up. So we're at over 20 million views from every single country on the planet now.
That is far more than Inconvenient Truth, by the way. And what blows me away about all of this is that you break it down, and it's so simple, the simplicity of this particular video and how it explains our consumerism and what it's doing to our world, right? Our planet. It's so simple and so dire. Immediately, I wanted to donate. Immediately, I wanted to contact you and go, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm so glad you liked it. You know, a lot of environmentalists, we kind of get in our own way. We tend to be really whiny and wonky and talk about stuff and, you know, carbon sequestration and parts per million and all these big words that turn people off. And the bottom line is it's not that complex what's happening. And so I wanted to make a film that was easy to watch, enjoyable to watch, and just sort of put the truth on the table.
Okay, so since it's not complicated and we know that it's simple, I don't understand why we haven't gotten any further. There's been complaints about our administration, the White House not really focusing in on climate change like we should be, you know, and I suggest that you send that out to every person, every Congress member. Send them a link to the Story of Stuff Project to remind them of how dire things are. Do you think that they understand the severity of where we are?
I think it's increasingly hard to deny the severity. I mean, I think that across this country, the visible evidence of a disrupted climate are increasingly clear. So unless you are just diehard committed to denial in spite of all the facts, you've got to be coming around at this point. Right now, our job is not so much to convince people there's a problem, but to figure out what to do about it. And if you look at the polls, most people think there is a problem. Most people think there's a problem and care and want to do something about it. The missing piece now is not more information, but what to do about these problems.
So what do we do? What are you optimistic about the future, watching us move along in snail-like pace, trying to figure this all out? It feels to me like we're running out of time.
We are running out of time. And I'll tell you, if you just look at the scientific data about the state of the natural ecosystems right now, it's really hard to be optimistic. I mean, all the scientists are saying now that a number of ecosystem services, which means sort of things that the planet does that allows us to live here, from moderating water to moderating the climate to the fish in the ocean, a lot of these things are really at a tipping point where we are about to stretch them so far, it will be hard to come back. So from a scientific level, it's hard to be optimistic, but yet I am optimistic. And the reason I am optimistic is because of the people level. I have traveled all over this country and lots internationally talking to people about some of the environmental and social and health problems. And everywhere I go, from the smallest town in rural India to big cities in the U.S., like every place you go, people want a better future. People are coming together and talking about these big issues and figuring out what to do. There is a resurgence and renaissance right now of people putting their best selves forward and figuring out how can we build a society that is sustainable, that is healthy, that is fair, and that's a lot more fun than what we're doing now.
You mentioned India, and of course, from a global perspective, we have dead zones all over the place. We just saw the articles just this past week of China, you know, where the smog was far worse than they ever imagined, where children had to stay inside. I mean, it was ridiculous. When you read stories like this, or you hear stories like this, does this set you back at all, or does it make you, does it encourage you to do more instantly?
It encourages me to do more. I mean, I love this planet so much. It is so beautiful, this planet that we have. And I love my global neighbors so much that when I hear about one of these problems, I am even more motivated, partly because they are solvable. You know, if there are some problems that really are intractable that I just don't know what to do about. The environmental problems are not like that. There are so many things that we could do better. If there were no solutions, if there wasn't a better way to make our stuff, to transport it around, to build our buildings, to heat our homes, if there wasn't a better way to do all this, that would be a bummer. But the truth is there are just thousands and thousands of solutions on the shelf ready to go, plus lots more under development. So really there's a lot of reason for hope if we demand them. The one missing piece is that the millions and millions of people who care and who want a better future need to get active. We need to start demanding these solutions, demanding them from our businesses, from our elected leaders, from our neighbors. We absolutely can build a better future.
That is my concern. When it comes to leadership, you remember during World War One or Two, we learned that, you know, during World War Two specifically, that, you know, you loose lips would sink ships. You got to do your part. You got to ration, make sure your neighbors have what they need. We were giving these like memos to constantly remind us of what we are to do to make sure and ensure that we are safe and that our neighbors are safe and have what they need. We are not encouraged today as a community, as a nation, to do more to make sure that Mother Earth is safe. What do you say to that? And how do we get people to understand that we need our leaders to give us that message every day?
Well, that's the perfect analogy, because that is the level of commitment and scale that we need if we're going to turn things around. Instead of that kind of sort of clarion, compelling, inspiring vision for all of us to get behind, we get these stupid lists of 10 simple things to do, which, you know, they're all fine things to do, but carrying your own bag to the grocery store, even though that is an excellent thing to do and we should definitely do it, that is not commensurate with the scale of the problem. We've got to move beyond these simple little greening our purchasing habits kind of exchanges to aiming much higher. We need to green our national energy grid. We need to green the way that we transport all of our stuff around this country. And we need to get much higher, which we cannot do without government leadership. So that's exactly the kind of scale. Actually, last year I took my daughter to see the Hoover Dam because I wanted to show her the scale and impressiveness of the kind of things that our country can build when we put our mind to it. And that is exactly what we are called to do right now in terms of transitioning to a clean energy future. Buying a Prius, riding your bike, excellent thing to do, not even a drop in the bucket. We need much, much bigger change than that.
Exactly. And I want to talk about that, particularly from your perspective. Are you tired? How far have you come since 2007? And how much more do you have to give of yourself to this? It seems like insurmountable feat that you are going after. My guest is Annie Leonard. Annie, we're going to take a break and come back in just a moment. She is founder of Story of Stuff Project. I encourage you to go to storyofstuff.org. We'll be back in just a moment.
News for Minnesota is heard on News Radio 830. WCCO.
It is now 7:25 here at WCCO. Welcome back. We are visiting with Annie Leonard. She is founder of Story of Stuff Project. Just go to storyofstuff.org and learn so much more of what you can do to help out our planet. Of course, the Story of Stuff is one of the most watched environmental themed online movies of all time, which I still can't get over that. It's so remarkable. Yet when I saw it, I know that it was done a few years ago. I think 2007 you did that movie, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, 2007, it still seems so fresh for today, because to me, it doesn't feel like we're doing enough. But before we go further with that, I want to find out where you are with all of this. You have been working tirelessly to really make a difference, and you are making a difference with over 20 million hits. Yet as you walk down the street or you go and visit these islands where they have no recycling, like I was in Hawaii, and I couldn't find one recycling bin. And I finally stopped and said, this was on the Big Island. I said, excuse me, where are the recycling bins? They said, we don't recycle.
Isn't that crazy? On an island, of all places.
Of all places, they have three incinerators, which I believe are near capacity at this point.
Incinerators, that is the dumbest way to handle your waste. I mean, that is just, absolutely insane. I went to Hawaii just once, and I actually brought all my garbage home in my suitcase because I couldn't bear to leave it there for the incinerator.
Exactly. I mean, it's got to be very difficult for you. So as you watch all of this happen, and you know that you're making a difference when you see 20 million hits on this for this particular movie, yet you are also seeing that people don't seem to be doing as much as we should be doing at this point.
So there's a couple things that I do to keep myself cheered up and moving forward. One thing I do is I make sure I carve out time every day to take care of myself and to invest time in my own community and my own sustainability. We cannot save the planet if we are beating ourselves up and treating ourselves like martyrs. We got to be healthy. We got to do exercise. We got to eat well. We got to spend time with the people that we love. We have to be the change that we seek. So you got to make sure you do that. And then the other thing that I do that really helps is I seek out the solutions. It's true that when you walk down the street, you see a lot of the same old business as usual. But in many businesses, in many communities all around the world, people are coming up with incredible innovations. There's some places to look like the Biomimicry Institute or Yes Journal are places that have collections of fabulous new inventions, new systems, new cultural traditions. Mm-hmm. Knowing that there are people that are actually putting these solutions to work, it, for me, is the biggest optimism and hope booster that there is. I need it for my mental health. Because if you just looked at business as usual all day, you know, it'd be hard to get out of bed in the morning. But there are so many solutions out there.
It's got to be frustrating when you go from neighborhood to neighborhood and you see that there's so much more that can be done, yet the message doesn't seem to be sinking in. We got to take a break in just a moment. But when we come back after the weather, can you stick with me?
Sure.
Great, because I want to ask you about all of the articles. When I went online today to look up, you know, well, who's talking about climate change today? Who's talking about global warming today? Whether you call it climate change or global warming, I don't care. It's changing. And so I wanted to see what was being said. In our own paper here in the Twin Cities, our Star Tribune, there was an editorial called Prepare for Impact for Climate Change. And of course, you know, it's kind of the doom and gloom, you know, let's get ready. This is how you buckle down and just get ready because here it comes. And you're out there screaming, no. Sure, you can buckle down, but that's not all you can do. There's so much more to just put a halt to it. So when we come back, I want to talk to you about how frustrating or how wonderful it must be that so many are writing about something you've been fighting for almost a decade. It is now 7:35 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You're listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele, and joining me is Annie Leonard, founder of Story of Stuff Project. Welcome back, Annie.
Thank you.
Okay, so the bottom line is this. I have been reading article after article, website after website that is just screaming about climate change. Here in Minneapolis, we had an editorial in the Star Tribune, and it's called Prepare for Impact of Climate Change, where they talk about the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon that was canceled last year and also in 2007 because of insufficient snow, and they're facing the same problem this year, so they have to postpone it. We see the signs of it, yet it's so hard for us to accept it. When you read all the articles, you hear about state after state, nation after nation reporting on the major changes that is happening to our world. You've been screaming this for years now. How do you deal with that? And what do you suggest? Do they call you and say, how do we fix this?
I wish they would. I have lots of ideas. You know, the changes are starting to be visible, so more and more people are talking about them. But what's really scary is that the changes are happening even faster than the most aggressive computer modeling from 20, 30 years ago. I mean, we are really in for some major changes in terms of our climate, and it's showing up all kinds of places, things like pests, like beetles that live in the forest that used to die off every winter. It's not getting cold enough for them to die off, so they're living and damaging more of the wood. Crops are getting all messed up. Bird migration's getting all messed up. Like, it is, you know, the crazy weather like Hurricane Sandy, there's just so many ways that it's beginning to manifest. And so one thing we need to do, first and foremost, is transition off fossil fuels. We need to transition to a clean energy economy. We cannot do that without the government and without businesses on board. So that's one thing we need to get politically active about. If your listeners are interested in getting involved in some campaigns, there are some excellent campaigns at 350.org. Go to www.350.org. And that is an excellent organization that offers all kinds of ways to get involved for the political campaigns. So locally, there are things we need to do, too. We need to figure out how to use less energy, and we need to get to know our neighbors and rebuild some of the community infrastructure so that we can take better care of each other, because we're going to be needing each other, whether it's, you know, borrowing some eggs when you're in the middle of a cake, so you don't bake in a cake, so you don't have to drive all the way to the store, or sharing power tools, or, you know, watching out for each other. We're going to need each other a lot more as we move to a low-carbon economy.
And, you know, Annie, we're starting to see that. Of course, you know, there's a much bigger demand for chicken coops. A lot of people in the city now are starting to bring chickens in and grow them in their yards. We're really starting to see that people know that there is a major change happening. So grow your own food. Find a way to share with your neighbors. Get the word out, because it's changing far quicker than we ever thought. Okay, let's talk a little bit about all the languages that the movie The Story of Stuff project is in. How many languages right now?
You know, I can't even keep track anymore. At first, when the film came out and we were inundated by requests to translate it, I couldn't arrange the translation fast enough, so I just opened it up and said, okay, anyone who wants to translate it, translate it. And as far as I know, about 30 or 35 languages now. We've gotten emails from people in China, in Lebanon. It's been translated into Arabic, in Thailand. I mean, it's just literally all over the world people have translated it. And, you know, The Story of Stuff is not our only film. That was our first film, and that's the main film, which is 20-minute long. That's the biggest one. But then we've made 7 other films that are all available at storyofstuff.org that look at other aspects of the problem. So we have The Story of Bottled Water, which looks at the incredible wastefulness of bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
The Story of Cosmetics, which looks at toxic chemicals in everyday products. All these films are there in English, and many of them have been translated into other languages, too.
You know, years ago, we used to have cable cars, and then they got, you know, Ford started manufacturing the cars, bought up all the cable companies or something like that. And then, of course, we have cars on the road. Now, all of a sudden, light rail or cable cars are coming back, and we're really seeing a resurgence of that across the country. I am so encouraged by that. And I know that that can make a huge difference. Hopefully, it can make a huge difference quickly, but at least we know that it can make a huge difference. You might have been listening to our weather report while you were waiting. And of course, you're out of California. I believe you're in Northern California, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so I don't know if you heard that, you know, we could see wind chills tonight of about, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30 or 40 below zero. Oh. We're used to that in Minnesota, but we don't see them as often. When I first moved to Minnesota in 1980, I have to tell you, Annie, it used to be so cold. All you would see were people's faces. I mean, their eyes or their noses, because we were completely covered up. It was so cold. But boy, has that changed. I can actually wear my trench coat, if it's lined, until mid-January, because it's just not as cold anymore. So we see it happening, yet we don't do what we know that we can do. Let me ask you about the first family. We finally have a first family who seems to be really pushing being green, growing your own food. Does that give you encouragement?
Oh, absolutely. And I also think that President Obama was very constrained in his first term. Mm-hmm. And now that it's his second term, so he's gotten sort of freed himself a bit up from some of that constraint of having to get reelected. He said that climate is one of his top priorities that he's going to be working on. And colleagues of mine that are much closer to him than I am tell me that he's absolutely serious about it. So I am enormously hopeful. But again, it is up to us. You know, one of my friends who worked in the White House for a while said that every day people were yelling at Obama to do stuff, but it wasn't us. It was the oil companies asking for less regulation. It was the chemical companies asking for less regulation. We need to then make our voices heard and say, we want to transition to clean energy. We want to be able to have warm homes and cook our food and get transport ourselves around without trashing the planet and trashing the climate. So, excuse me, we got to make our voices heard if we want to push Obama to action. But I think he's ready if we're ready to push him.
That is my final question for you tonight, because I had a chance to interview an expert on think tanks. And as far as I'm concerned, think tanks are just lobbyists, you know, what a fancy name. And so we've got all these lobbyists that are really out there giving a voice to corporate America, yet we don't have the voice of we the people. We elect these people, but they don't go out and scream what we want to be heard in D.C. How much more can we do? What else can we do to help you do more of what you do and get it all done?
Well, we got to all help each other here. There is so much more we can do. So just over the winter holidays, I was watching that wonderful PBS documentary, Eyes on the Prize,
yes,
about the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were marching in the streets. People were riding buses where they knew they were going to get beaten up when they arrived. People were taking action, singing songs, protesting, boycotting. They were so active. And these days, we're just so busy sitting on the couch watching TV. We got to turn off the television, get talking with our neighbors, and get active. It could be anything from calling up your congressperson and telling them what's important to you, writing a letter to the editor of your local newspaper, starting a local club to start more sharing or community gardens or bike lanes or whatever it is that excites you. But we have simply got to get back involved as engaged citizens in our democracy, because while we've been so busy watching TV and not paying attention, the corporations have really taken over our democracy. We need to get the corporations out of our political system, and then we need to get the people, we the people, back in.
I completely agree. Turn off the reality shows and start living your reality, because this is very real, what's happening right now. Annie, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you joining us tonight. I'm very, very impressed with what you're doing, and I hope that we can keep spreading the word. The Story of Stuff Project.org is the website, storyofstuff.org. You're doing a great work, and I am so grateful. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thanks for spreading the word.
All right. You got it. Take care of yourself, Annie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Annie Leonard, founder of Story of Stuff Project. And seriously, it's remarkable when people take it upon themselves. They just want something done, and they just move and say, I'm going to do something. And whatever that little something is, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger when we all get on board. There was a time I didn't think one person could really make a difference. I have witnessed it. I know it. I've lived it. We can make a difference one at a time if we just gather together and say something. So make your work. Make your voice be known. If you really believe in this, you see it happening, you know that global warming is a problem, whether you call it climate change or whatever it is. But don't think that this is just the natural cycle of life. It is not. We have a hand in this. And if we have a hand in making it what it is today, we can change it with that same hand. With that same hand.